Hello, listening people.
Hello.
Hello, Bartek. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well, Ryan. How are you?
I am doing very well myself. I am smiling from ear to ear because we have finally entered what was promised of 2024. It may have taken us a quarter of the year to get there, but we have gotten there. We have finally entered the realm of musicals, and I'm so glad of it. But before we gallivant off and do a jaunty musical number that comes out of nowhere, how about we get into
in
the
two languages.
I was shocked that we had... we'll get to that, I guess. I'll say right now, I was shocked that we had an English language musical number.
I did not remember that.
I was fucking flabbergasted. That's a first, right? We've had ones where they've sung some lyrics in English, but not... he's an English-speaking character speaking a song, singing a song in English. Fucking
but still in the style of the film industry that she's...
a little bit, I would say so, but there was also like a 2000s era kind of pop to it as well.
That's what I mean. The instrumentation and things were very different, but still a lot of like the editing and
the visuals of it.
The simplicity of the language also.
Oh, yes. But before we get all bogged down in the details of the movie we're discussing, we should at least talk about ourselves and what we do here. Bartek, how about you give us the briefing here? I'm a soldier ready for war, but sure. I need to know the mission statement.
Yep, so I'm Bartek. I sit near the door, and Ryan sits near like the closet next to the spongy foam.
I just left the closet, so...
yeah. That's what we do. We sit down while we do our show Pictures Powwow, where we cover films that have been recommended by someone. Ooh, who is that someone? Well, it's actually, you know, multiple people. We do it on a 3-week cycle. 1 week I will recommend a film, the next Ryan will, and then the third week is the listening people choice.
Listening people choice. Say it more Britishly, like this film.
The would. Listening people choice.
No ball. No ball.
The listening people choice.
So you were saying, yes, and we talk about films that come recommended, and there's a way of doing it. And what have we landed on this time?
Who did this? We've landed on the beginning of the cycle, which is me.
You were the bowler, and we are now...
well, I started batting, but...
now we are the ones batting it out of the park here. You bowled this our way, now we're batting it. That makes sense. I've watched cricket movie. I was going to say movies. I've watched one. There's not many cricket movies outside of India and England.
There's a horror film called I Know How Many Runs You Made Last Summer.
I will believe you, but what film did you give us?
So every year I like to pick at least one Bollywood film, and that's what I did for this one. For musical year, we have a Bollywood choice, like every other year for Pictures Powwow. And the Bollywood film that I picked was Lagaan from 2001.
Give the full title.
That's the title as it's released in India, but internationally they added a subtitle, which is Once Upon a Time in India.
Once Upon a Time in India.
Lagaan, back in action.
Beautiful tale. Now, people, if you have not seen Lagaan, we would say that you should. As of the release of this episode, it may have shuffled off of Netflix. By the time we release this, it will have gone off of Australian and or international Netflix.
Literally, yes, Ryan.
So, truly tragic stuff. But I'm sure there's other means and ways to find it. And just to give praise to some streaming services like Netflix, it is fortunate that we have the ability to watch some international cinema readily and more easily available than sometimes the more mainstream affair. It isn't universal, of course. There are some countries that obviously don't get the time to shine, but Indian cinema is, as we have discussed many times over the years on this podcast, very, very important in the grand scheme of everything. It's a huge industry.
Oh, yeah.
And to have the ability to watch so many of them on sites like a Netflix here in the West is good. Like, that's a universal good. And it's that thing of you just want more of it there. Like, I've not done a deep dive into how far back Netflix goes with Indian cinema. Like, all I know is we only cover early to mid to maybe late 2000s, and we did Sultan, which is like the newest Indian movie we've done.
It's all based on ones that I've seen, and I guess I haven't seen too many much older ones.
You haven't seen ones from the 90s and so on?
Probably seen
much.
One or two from the 90s, but older than that, I don't think I've seen any.
It's just very interesting because I know from our interactions and the engagement we get on episodes like this and just doing my own research, like someone like Shah Rukh Khan, some of his iconic and or considered greatest films are older than the ones we look at.
Yeah.
And so it's just this interesting
thing. In his early career, he played a villain most of the time, whereas the ones that we've covered,
he's hero. He's
typically heroic, you know, romantic.
But Lagan, how would you describe this to someone who has not seen it, but you want them to give it a watch?
So Lagan is a film that it's a period piece set in, I think, like 1890. So just before the 20th century. It is while the British are still occupying, India, the country that this is set in and the country that made it. This film focuses largely on the land tax that they put upon the poor people of the country.
The different regions of the country.
Yeah,
yes.
And that's what the title means. Lagan means land tax. They have to pay every year. It's not literally money, but it's like, you know, farm produce and stuff like that to the king. The king keeps a very small portion of that and gives the rest of it to the British.
Mm-hmm.
And in the recent years of this film's setting, they've had incredibly poor rainfall, and so it's making everyone really struggle.
This one year, they got no rainfall. That's why the extra pressure is on. The previous years, they've been scraping on by, having to plead to the British to give them chances, which the British have yielded on in the past. But now it has not rained for a year and the British are not budging, seemingly.
and then through a series of, you know, unfortunate encounters with the British, there is a threat that they're going to have to pay double Lagan, meaning, you know, twice as much on this year where it hasn't rained at all. And a wager is made that if some of the rural villagers can beat some of the British officers in a game of cricket, they will completely abolish Lagan for 3 years, including that year, under the threat that if they lose, then they have to pay triple that year.
And that is where the movie is in terms of its big story. This is a long film.
Mm-hmm.
It's not what I would describe, as Bartek may have last week, as an epic. Like, when you say an epic, some ideas may forge in the brain of what that is. I would not say this is an epic. This is...
Screw you, Wikipedia.
I wouldn't say it is. Not in the way that, like, some of the other films we've covered over the years, Indian or not, epic.
See epic as something that covers, like, a long period of time.
Yes, and also the scope of what is happening, like... The good, the bad, and the ugly doesn't cover a long period of time, but it's an epic in terms of, like, you're watching the characters trek along the country and also in and out of the Civil War while they're just minuscule figures. Like, this is dealing with an epic situation in terms of the British, and I guess you could say they do overthrow the British in a fashion.
British in their province get, like, you know, spoiler alert for the literal ending of the film, they get humiliated out of the province.
Yes, but of course. So we're going to talk about it now in more depth detail, and yes, spoiling of things. Nearly 4 hour runtime was intimidating to go into it. It's a sports film about a sport I find incredibly boring.
Mm.
So that was also not in its favor. I had no familiar faces to greet me into it because this is a different lead actor and I didn't recognize any of the supporting. Maybe you'll tell me there was someone here that was in another or in the behind the scenes production. I don't think we've done this director before. Like, I was kind of walking in with my head held low just because a lot of those elements coming in do not appeal to me. But I will say, because I have not seen this before, this is a first time for me. I had a good time. This is probably in the middle of the Bollywood or Indian films we've watched for the podcast. Mm-hmm. I thought the pacing for what it was relatively solid.
Yeah.
I have some issues with, not so much the pacing, but the pacing gets affected by some writing issues that I had. But overall, I found this a thoroughly entertaining affair. I found it genuinely compelling, especially when it was touching upon the unrest of the times and the relationship with the British. And we have had to discuss many times over on this podcast colonialism and the effects of it. And we've covered several films directly dealing with that.
Yeah, as well Nightingale. As
just, yeah, or...
Last of the Mohicans.
That's a great one. And... why am I Breaker Morant?
Yes.
And what I was going to say is, and we as Australians, we understand it as well. It's a part of our culture. We have the Union Jack on our flag too. So there's a deep familiarity there. And I just loved how this movie dealt with it. And it was dealt seriously. There was no jokes had at the expense of the British. The British were pieces of shit in this. And the films that we just listed, as well as this one, all gets the British colonial mentality. All of these are different films made by different countries, different years, different mentalities, different directions, but each one of them sums up the British mentality of the times. Like, I was watching our main snivelly British bastard in this, and I thought he would be great friends with that officer from this movie and this one from that movie and this one, and they all are a part of a system at large that, like, even India knows it, Australia knows it, America knows it, like, all of these different places from different times know what that was.
He's played very differently in this film, but I was thinking of the Nightingale one quite a lot.
Yes, of course, of course. But overall, I thought this was a positive affair. There were things that that keep this back for me, but overall, I had a great time with this. And who's the lead, just to remind us all, our lead actor?
So the lead is Aamir Khan.
Aamir Khan, he was quite a revelation in a way, because for the majority of the time, I must admit, he did not make an impact on me. I had no reaction to him, didn't hate him, didn't love him. He really didn't do anything for me. But I think that's by design, in a way. His character is a very passive character, but he has his moments of spark. And then by the back half of the film, especially once we get into the cricket game, he as a character and the actor really get to step it up and show us why they are in charge of the story. And I just wanted to say that now, because we'll be obviously talking about all of these things, but he's a new actor to me. I haven't seen him before. What's he like? And it was a revelation in that way of, for majority of the time, I didn't have any real feeling on him. And then there came a point where they locked it in, and I had an appreciation for what the movie was doing with him and what he was doing as an actor for the whole film.
Yeah, I honestly haven't seen him in too much. I think I've maybe seen him in two or three films. And I know that we have this one Bollywood film on our listening people's list that I believe he's the lead of, and that's a beloved film.
Mm-hmm.
So we will see him again in the future, at least in that. But yeah, I was honestly kind of similar. Like, he was kind of... passive is a really good word you used there. I was going to say, like, plain, but passive throughout a lot of the film. He is the heart of the story in terms of, like, he brings all the villagers together. He brings in some enthusiasm. But yeah, in that latter part of the film, like, especially when his team is finally at the batting stage, you have so many moments where he interacts with his teammates where, you know, he encourages them, and you can see that when they... get out, or they make some sort of blunder, you can see, like, a certain part of, like, guilt on his face where, yeah, you can tie certain actions of his to where the downfall came from, and, like, he's really shouldering the responsibility of everything.
Yeah, he as a performer, plays it really candidly throughout the majority of how much the burden of what he has done weighs on him, but then when faced with it in a way that you cannot escape from it because you're in the game, what should be a fun time, it's a game after all. something that he got them into because he scoffed at how this is a thing for children.
Mm.
Now his life depends on winning. And this is...
It's a game to them, but for us, it's life.
Yes. And unlike a lot of sports films or your athlete movie or whatever, where you get told like their life depends on it or this or their relationship, like your Rocky films, for instance, which they do a very good job of those in those movies as well. This is one in which an entire population is dependent on this game working for them. And
in a lot of sports films, it's like, oh, I want to make something of myself and this is my chance. Here it's, no, we have to win.
This is also a great character piece for him because he is one who is so strong of conviction that he, at the start of this, was willingly going to let them shoot him in the face because he was just so... you know, that way. And then we see throughout the course of events, he becomes more humble while still maintaining honor, while still maintaining integrity, while still maintaining convictions. But the lesson is you don't have to be such a, I guess, egotist or blunderer of that. Like there's what I really liked about like the team dynamic is we get to see a whole cavalcade of different people from different areas and different walks of life show that they themselves, through their own ways, are also heroic. It's not just our lead man because he saves animals from the British and or whatever, or tries to, and he's so like in your face, like, yeah, you can shoot me because I'm more on it. There's so many other people who have stories like his and handle it in very different ways. One of my favorite characters, just to get into it, was the guy who was maintaining the British horses, and the main British guy, he kicked him in the face. And
I think his name was Arjun?
Yes.
Maybe?
Arjun. Yeah. And he had that wonderful speech about how your boot, the sole of it, will get thinner as time goes on, and the nail will pierce through it and hurt. And I loved him as a character. And he was like, honestly, I could see a tale being told from him as the POV.
Mm.
And there were so many in this that I could say that statement for, but it doesn't detract from who the movie did focus on, because each one of them is a reflection in a way to who our lead is.
Yeah, and also not only just their personalities, but like the things that they do get connected to their sense of heroism as characters, because this is a film set in a village, very similar to Bilu that we did last year. And every single member who joins the team has a different role or different personality in that village. And you have this great scene. It's when the guy that's, you know, the double agent guy is trying to join the group. And they initially tell him like, no, you can't. And then they explain like each member of the group. It's like, this is their job in the village, and this is how their job makes them good at cricket. Like, this guy chases chickens all day, so he can catch anything because his eyesight and hand-eye coordination is so great. It really, yeah, highlights the strengths that they bring to the game, which aren't typically sport-like qualities.
You recommended this, so I assume you've been familiar with this film for quite some time, but how about you tell us a bit more about your relationship with it? Was this one that you grew up on? Is this a DVD thing? Did you see this in the cinema with your mum back in the day? What is your history with Ligon?
So this one, it's a little bit interesting. So it's one that I was aware of for a long time, but I didn't watch it until quite a ways into my adulthood. I believe in 2013, our second year of uni, I did a film class with our friend Reese called Cinema Cultures or something like that. It's the same class that I did that Grybowicza came from.
Oh, very nice.
And that whole unit, we were looking at, I think, like four different cultures and the films that they make. And there was a brief period where we talked about Bollywood, and this was one of the films they recommended. And I found that interesting because, this is a film that I've heard a bit about, which I'll go into in a second. But I think that course specifically pushed me to finally watch the film. In terms of my history of it, it's one that I'd heard my mum talk a lot about. And there was an interesting story in the family where, you know, of my relatives, my mum is the one that likes Bollywood films. Mm-hmm. And it's somewhat stretched out from her to the rest of us. Obviously, I watch it because my mum got me into it. My brother's seen a bit. But we also have my aunt and uncle, My uncle, Justin, who recommended the producers to us, he's a very, very big cricket guy. Like, whenever I visited him when I was younger, like, there would be one room that has just like a shitload of cricket trophies. And he wasn't into Bollywood at all. I think Mum was telling me at some point that, you know, he... Not really dismissively, but like kind of like shrugged off, like, yeah, you know, I'm not really, this doesn't sound like something I'd be into. But apparently eventually he watched this film Lagan, and I think she said it like drove him to tears or something. Like, he really loved it. And that story always really stuck with me. Like, wow, yeah, this sounds like it's a really powerful film. And, you know, it even connected with my uncle there. So I'd be keen to check it out at some point.
He's Polish, yes, of course. Is cricket popular or that regarded in Poland or Polish culture?
I don't.
Or is that just because he lives in Australia, yes? Or?
Yeah, I think he was born down here, mate. I don't know if
he. Oh, was he born down? Oh, okay.
I actually don't know, but he's very much an Australian.
Okay,
so,
fair enough. Yeah. I just wanted to double check. I remember in my pop's later years, he really got into cricket, and we were very weirded out by that because it was just a thing that happened out of the blue.
But definitely grew up down here.
Okay, but because cricket, for those who are not from countries that play it, is very much a game for us in Australia. It's very much one of the popular sports. We participate in games against India and England and New Zealand and so on. It's very much something that is in the DNA, so... It is a story that I can understand, although I'm not a fan of cricket. I understand the importance of it, culturally speaking, when you suggested this film as being the one of conversation and you said it was a sports movie. I was like, oh, it's cricket, because that's what I associate in terms of India's passion for sports.
Yeah,
if cricket is the main one I leap to.
If I said I was recommending an Indian sports film that I've seen, it would either be that one or Chakta India, which is women's hockey.
There you are. But
I was an extra.
I watched this all in one go. I didn't break this up. I watched it all in one sitting.
Same here.
I don't know if this is a Netflix thing or if this is just a movie, but this is not one of those, to my eyes, that had a clear intermission or halfway point.
Yeah, all the ones...
It all kind of just went together. Like, I remember with Om Shanti Om, that one structurally makes it very clear.
Yeah.
Same with something like Bilu. Bilu kind of made it clear.
Doom 2 was an obvious one too.
I'm pretty sure. Oh, and of course... Because
it switched countries.
Sultan, it has a pretty obvious, like, he transitions from one to the thing. But it was just told in such a... long-term but also episodic way where I never really could say, like, oh, this is where, you know, you would take a breather. It all flowed really well
the
in that
closest, way. The closest that I could think of is when they finally form the team and, like, the British officers, like, they're having, like, a stare-down with them. Mm. That would be my guess of an intermission. Because I know that other Bollywood films that we've done for Pictures Power Hour, in the past I have seen them where there is literally a shot that says intermission on the screen. And when I've watched them for the podcast, like, oh, they removed the intermission thing.
Well, I was so in love with the cast of characters in this. I was surprised when they kept introducing new ones, but still being able to nurture and maintain the older ones that were there. I really liked the dynamics at play with the team, but also with the outsiders. I loved the king as a character. I thought he was really great. And I know it's a bit of a cop-out for some people that I, of course, think the best scene is the one with the English-speaking characters, but I thought the best scene of the movie... was with the king and the British officer and his sister at the beginning when the British officer's like, eat the meat.
They're having a, yeah.
That was...
I was going to say they're having a meeting.
I don't know. I know this is quite a big pull. Obviously, the filmmaking styles are different, but that type of stare down and intimidation made me think of Inglourious Basterds in a way. You know, you've got your Christoph Waltz and he's just so happily being like, so they're underneath us, right? Yeah. Just that demented quality. And I really thought that was quite a gripping sequence and it was shot placid. Like, it was just no aggression in the way that it was shot. And I think that made it more unsettling, that This was in a bright daylight. Everything is gorgeous and beautiful. All of the outfits, all of the haircuts, all of the facial hair and everything. And everyone's so mannered.
Yeah, and that's what I was going to bring up. It's contrasting what you've already seen of this character, him out on a hunt and, you know, looking down on this darkie who's dared to slightly ruin his hunt. And he's just threatened to kill him. Now he's, you know, at his headquarters and he's meeting with the king and everyone's proper and they're having a dinner. And surely here he's going to be all manners and stuff. And then
his sister's even here to watch him.
His sister's even there and even she's shocked at what he's doing.
And yet he is backed up by the system next to him, and that is a part of all of his crew back his play. Everyone except for the foreigners in his eyes, even though he's on a land that is not his own. But this king, how dare he not eat the meat, I told him, and how dare my sister not respect what I do, because they are lesser than. And I did not think that the British were portrayed as cartoons in this. I was actually very much in awe of how well acted the English speaking characters were and how well written they were. We see many times over in some foreign films when they get the English speakers, they aren't directing them in the same way. So their performance to us who speak the language can notice that they're not very good or don't gel with the main cast of characters.
And their line delivery is a bit wooden because that's the way they were directed.
Not in this. I don't know if you had similar feelings, but I thought that the portrayal of the British from the direction, the acting, and the writing was not at all cartoonish. I found them genuinely disgusting in a way that, like I said, we've seen in other films and just through our own cultural lens as recognizable.
I think a little bit cartoonish, but in general, like, they were legitimately, you know, threatening and disgusting people. I think that actually lent itself more to making them seem more evil.
I guess maybe because they have the big moustaches and stuff, but that's just what the times were.
When I was watching the film, I was thinking to myself, like, oh yeah, they're such moustache-twirling villains. But then I, you know, doubled back. I'm like, no, not really. Like, they are very much, like, pushing their personality, you know, into the camera, but it's not quite to, you know, like a hammy degree.
Again, like, honestly, I think that this was pitched at the right level to get the point across, and I thought all of the performances from the English characters, from the sister to a main man to his right-hand man to their boss, I thought was all very well played. I wouldn't change a thing about any of it.
Also, I completely forgot this. Really impressed that some of them actually learned Hindi for the film.
I like that too. I was actually a bit shocked because I recognized some of the British actors from certain roles, and I was shocked to see them speaking in Hindi for large swaths.
Going back to what you said way earlier in the episode, like, if I could point out that if we've seen any of these people in anything we've done before, I don't think there's anyone in this film that I've seen anything else or that we've done on the podcast. So I was wondering if any of the British people would be recognizable to you.
Yep. There was the sister was, she's done a lot of American work actually, which is interesting, but she was a main cast member in The L Word. So it was kind of fun to see her. Yeah. And she was in some recent projects, and the main British villain, he's been in like a ton of stuff. It's just like, oh, it's that sniveling prick. And he's still at it today. He's bald now and he looks great. Like, he just looks so mean, and just, he has a Jason Statham kind of, what's that actor? I always forget his name. Luke Goss look to him, that type of thing.
I remember years and years and years ago, I was telling, like, oh yeah, I've seen this one Bollywood film that has, like, you know, a big part of the cast are like British people. And one of the main characters is this like British lady. And I think I told you, because I couldn't remember who it was, that it was Beckham,
Keira Knightley.
Yeah, I was like, oh yeah, Keira Knightley's in that film. But then I looked it up, like, oh whoops, I was wrong.
No, she was in Bend It Like Beckham.
Yeah, it was many years after I saw the film.
I've been talking away. How about you tell us some of the things that you appreciated or noticed or grabbed onto you on this watch?
So we have a narrator in this film, and we have actually seen him in something. He's Amitabh Bachchan, like the big, big actor man. He's the father of the Doom 2 main cop. He appeared in a cameo role in Om Shanti Om during like the red carpet outside the awards ceremony.
Oh, so not even for the big dance? I don't, for the Om Shanti Om dance?
He might have been there, but he actually had like, you know, a shot of him and like responding to a question. I think it's like, oh, so you're friends with Om Kapoor, right? Like, who?
Oh, yes, yes.
I think it was that guy. Yeah, he's big actor, man. He was in Baz Luhrmann's the...
Australia?
The 2012 one.
Greg Gatsby?
Yeah, Greg Gatsby. He was in that.
Oh.
Yeah, he's in Cholet. You have a copy of that. That's a big, yeah, beloved film. He's considered like the god of Indian actors. So that narrator is like, you know, a big name. And I noticed in the opening credits it said like special thanks to Amitabh Bachchan.
A lot of special thanks.
Mm.
A lot of reverence. I know that the production of this movie was shot in a village that went through quite a lot right before the shooting started. So it kind of adds to the character and the time period of the movie that everything does have that disheveled quality to it, because there was some like natural disasters or some circumstances that went in the village right before they had to shoot there. So, and the heat was very intense when they had to make this movie. This is a film where people are sweating because it is that hot. Like, I was taken aback in comparison to all of these other Bollywood movies we've had to watch where the dance numbers are elegant and beautiful and, you know, no one breaks a sweat unless it's Shah Rukh Khan with his shirt off near fire, you know, like that type of thing.
Yeah, the Dutch
disco. And even then it's fake Hollywood, like fake, not Hollywood, but, you know, like industry sweat where they've just sprayed him with a hose.
Yeah, well, I think that sequence was a movie in the movie.
Well, yeah, but I'm using that as an example.
Yeah, yeah.
But in this one, when she's dancing, she's got some sweat happening underneath those pits and on this and this. I'm like, because they filmed this on like a 48-degree day. They're not doing another fucking take. There's no way.
There was some trivia point about how like, oh, there weren't any luxury hotels nearby, so we had to like make one or something like that. And every actor had to tolerate it. And it ranged from like 4 degrees Celsius to 40 degrees Celsius.
Absolutely insane stuff.
Yeah. One thing that I really enjoyed, and I think I've probably brought this up a few times in previous Bollywood episodes, 2012, I went to India for a volunteer thing, and I obviously talked to a lot of Indian people while I was down there, and they were incredibly warm and friendly, you know, just very lovely people. And in this film, at the beginning, you know, we're mostly just seeing our Indian villager characters interacting amongst themselves. And there's a lot of, you know, like negative sentiment about like, oh, the white people,
the British,
you know, the British, they're, you know, ruining our lives.
And the traitors.
And they're traitors working for them.
Yeah.
Saved myself there.
Yeah.
And eventually you get to the point where the Elizabeth character approaches the what's now just four members of the cricket team. And their demeanor talking to her because she's being friendly to them is just incredibly warm. And I really connected to that. Like, oh, when I went to India, that's kind of how they spoke to me. They're like really interested in like talking to me, hearing what I had to say and socializing with me, especially like the fortune teller character who's like very, you know, hammy and, you know, kind of intimidating looking. Like
The most standoffish.
Like, he was just incredibly, like, friendly and just, you know, really keen to talk to Elizabeth.
Yes, I really liked Elizabeth as a character and what they did with her and using her as this vehicle to talk about how there's more to life than just the black and white, us versus them. And that there is, on both sides of everything, people who are willing to connect. And I thought that the love triangle aspect of this movie was very interesting, or like the kind of like him kind of not understanding that Elizabeth's in love with him, but kinda, and then the girl in the village and how she's annoyed because she can tell instantly. I thought that was actually really well done, and I was waiting for it to be cringeworthy, honestly. I was waiting for it as, like, I knew immediately what the pitch of that stuff was going to be.
Yeah.
And I was waiting for it to be awful or awkward or ham-fisted. And again, I honestly think that this film had a steadiness to it. I was going to ask you, and maybe you'll just say flatly yes because of this is how Indian cinema is, but is this a masala film? Because this is what I've been asking about since we started the journey with Indian movies, because to my eye, yeah, there's musical numbers, but most of them are diegetic. That was interesting. Like, most of them like happen for a reason. They're not all just out of nowhere musical numbers. Most of them happen like in the confines of like now we're doing a ritual or now we're doing this. But
yeah, not many of them are imagination sequences in this.
No, movie. And this film, I did not feel like it went into the different genres or tonal. I thought it stayed true to what the premise, like, or the story is, which is it's set in this specific time period under British rule, and it's a cricket, like, it's a sports story. And
they don't go super special effects-y, you know, imagination sequence.
Or break into comedic set pieces for the sake of it. Like, there are comedic characters, but they are always woven into things rather than, say, when in Bilu, we're just going to now have the comedy scene. Same with Om Shanti Om. I never felt like this film had the usual markings and trappings of the masala films we've had to watch. I thought this was, honestly, like, if you redid this and just said it was made in Hollywood, you would never even think, oh, yeah, it's genre-changing, blah, blah, blah. Like, this was just, to me, the most traditional from Western storytelling standpoint I've seen from Indian movies, and I wanted to get your opinion on it.
I guess it still is masala because it does cover, you know, just so many different little aspects, because, you know, you do have romance, you've got the sport film, you've got some action-y sequences like training montages.
But they're still like in sports relations. So,
And then you veer hard into like racism and colonialism and, you know, the relationships therein. And of course, musical sequences. So, you know, it does cover a few different grounds there, but I do see what you mean by it being very steady. I think I was even noticing that with the musical sequences, like, oh, they're directly reacting to something that's happening right now, or, oh, it's a festival, so they're going to sing in relation to the festival.
Also, we've had this conversation many times about masala stuff and how it's just a kind of a given in Indian cinema, but it isn't the only type of movie making there. It's not the only type of storytelling. It hasn't been the one that's been there the whole time. Like, if you look it up, it isn't.
Honestly, when I recommended this film, when I was thinking about recommending it, I actually didn't remember if this one had musical sequences or not.
It always just, one of the things when you discussed on the pod over the years what masala is and like how it's like a little bit of everything for everyone type of thing. It makes me question if we in our culture with Australia or in Hollywood for movie making, do we have a similar thing, but we just don't have a name for it? Because say with Australian movies like Idiot Box, that movie had so many different things. Would you call that, if we had a word for our own version, would you call it that, or would you just still call it a crime comedy?
We should get an Indian person to show them Idiot Box and ask, like, would you call this masala?
And I just was wondering because, to me, like, I think this is the least masala one we've watched, but I can see your point. But at the same time, when you were listing all of that, I'm just like, yeah, but, like, an average Hollywood movie could also cover all of those things, and we would never think to call it multi-genre bending blah.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Like, I know, I'm just using this as an example because it's an easy one, but, like, you would not call Joker a masala film, but it also covers a lot of different things, and he also has dream sequence. You know what I mean?
I know what you're trying to say. Yeah.
But I really enjoyed this overall. I thought back to our lead, I found him passionate. I think this is one of the most passionate performances of our leading actors we've seen. His character, although starts out as doesn't start out, but spends a good portion of the film as a passenger or as a vehicle to let everyone else kind of be the sympathetic one, because everyone else is more sympathetic than he is. Like, you feel for the bowler who's, you know, who's disabled and from a different caste system. You feel for the other bowler who's like, I used to be a British officer. I used to serve with the British and I hate them. And
yeah, the Sikh guy.
Yeah, yes. You feel for so many of these characters more than our lead one, but underpinning it is his grief. And
he's very much more of a traditional hero character than they are.
But I thought this lead actor, he was the first one to me that didn't feel like a movie star.
Well,
like all the other Khans that we've done, they all feel like, I'm a movie star. I have initials for my name. But this person, I never got that sense of ego or that sense of like stardom from him.
Going back to what I said about I've only seen him in two things, I mentioned in a very old episode we did, Doom from Video Game Month, not mm-hmm. Doom. I made a joke about like, oh yeah, we're doing Doom, not to be confused with the Doom trilogy. And that was the first time, you know, I'd ever mentioned that to you. And I just quickly did a rundown. It's like, oh yeah, the first film's okay, second film's really good, and the third film had a really good villain. And it's this actor who is the really good villain in that film.
Do you feel the same about just his presence as a performer?
Because I haven't seen him in too much and I don't have the strongest recollection, well, now I do because I've just watched Lagan again, I always imagine him with a very stern face, stern and focused.
Mm.
And he is that for a lot of this film until, like, you know, you have the sequences where he's a bit cheeky when, mm-hmm. you know, he smiles a bit and makes a few jokes. But yeah, I really would be keen on seeing him in a few more things because from what I understand, like, yeah, this guy is very beloved. Like, from what I understand also, he's one of the three big Khans, or at least, I don't know if that's still the case now, but
there's more Khans now.
Yeah, well, there's always been many Khans.
There's always many Khans.
But in terms of, like, big ones, like, the film, like, the production company is the Amir Khan
I
company.
Noticed.
And I was like, oh, wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah, but I just thought, even though I like, you know, the other actors we've covered on this pod, I feel like he just doesn't have that, I don't know, the way that they pose and the way that they hold themselves, like, and this applies to Hollywood stars as well, like, where you're like, they're a fucking movie star. He just feels like he is the character, he is the role. I honestly didn't think about, like, he's one of the big Khans. When I saw Shah Rukh Khan, I'm like, oh yes, I know immediately he's one of the big stars of India because of the way that he presents himself in his movies. Hence, when we did Bulu, I was actually happy to see him be vulnerable in a way I hadn't seen him do before.
In an ironic film where he's playing himself, kind of.
That's it. Now, were there things that did not work for you or held you back on your watching of Lagan? Like, I don't know where you place this in your viewership of Indian movies. Is this one that you would say is a favorite or kind of in the middle?
I hadn't really thought about it before. I guess a lot of the other Indian films that I've seen have, I guess, more of a higher fun factor, like, you know, in terms of, like, they bring in a lot of laughs, or, you know, they bring in a lot of color or just, you know, general, you know, makes you have a good time while watching it. This one does feel like a bit more of a serious film. So in that regard, even when I recommended this film to you and you were talking about, like, oh, it's so long, this is a bit of an intimidating effect. Oh, but it's a good film. And that's just kind of what I always gravitate towards with this one. It's like, oh, yeah, that's just a really good, solid film.
I understand. This doesn't have the vibrancy of the characters like some of the other movies do. Like, although I like all of them, they work in the confines of what the tone is of this movie, which is a lot more serious. Although some of them are a little bit funny, the characters, none of them are outrageous characters. None of them are the principal for Main Hunar. Like, none of them are going to rise to the level of Om's best friend in Om Shanti Om. Like, none of them are that, but they all work in harmony of what Lagan is doing.
It's very much a different way of doing, like, the supporting cast that Bilu had, because Bilu was also set in, you know, a rustic country town, and you did get, like, a bunch of these side characters, and they were played a little bit more for comedy because, you know, a big part of that film was, like, how the big sensationalism was kind of corrupting the daily life of this town, whereas this one, it's more of like a, you know, grouping together inspirational story,
and
you still had all these distinct characters.
And Bilou had a central joke, which is he's a hairdresser barber. And a lot of funniness came from we're taking the journey of a guy who just wants nice scissors as the thing, and his rivals are other people with nice scissors. Like, you know, that was a little bit of fun. Well, this doesn't have that. This isn't concerned about that at all. It's more concerned about the horrifying ramifications of colonialism upon India. That's the thing, and there's no jokes there. There's no smiling. There's no giggling about that, because it's played as, like most historical dramas are. They remind you of where we came from and the adversities that we've had to go through and or overcome, or, depending on your country, still are going through. And Lagan just did that perfectly. I mean, the title is about an injustice put upon the Indian people.
Yeah, land tax.
And yet it's also sung and cheered and heralded in this movie as like they have taken it and turned it into their own thing, because in the end it is the story about how, you know, the dream of being able to overthrow or overcome or beat the British at their own game.
No, and fun trivia point for people is that this film from 2001 is the most recent Indian nominee for Best Foreign Language Film at the Oscars. So, you know, it's a big one. Only three have done that so far. And there was a trivia point talking about Roger Ebert's review of the film, where he gave a, you know, glowing review, and he pointed out the dissonance and the contrast of when you see this beautiful Indian landscape and then you see like where the British are hanging out, and it's like, oh, this Western kind of blight on this, you know,
all of these
South Asian traditional land.
Yes, they're stone, cobble, you know, all regimented. It's just,
and the Maharaja's visiting there and he's just so out of place, kind of.
Indeed. Now, to give some negatives, I think the pacing and the length of the movie is drastically impacted by repetition. There are many scenes or ideas or even lines of dialogue or even the narration repeating things we already know. There's even moments where they're like, see this scene between the two English characters arguing? Let's just... Like, the narrator just talks over and you're like, hey, let's just get past it. And I think that's the biggest issue I have. It's not even about, like, unnecessary fluff, like with some other ones, like, oh, this comedy bit I don't need, or this characterization. It all just boils down to, it does feel padded.
Yeah, that
and
sequence.
It does feel repetitive, and it feels like it needs to hold the audience's hand when we get explained this already in a very dramatic way, and then they just say it again.
Yeah, that's
and again.
That's literally how that scene ends. Like with the when the British antagonist is confronting like his superiors, and the narrator's interrupting them. Like as soon as that scene ends, you get the shot, like short montage shot of him like riding away, and the narrator's just like summarizing exactly what we just heard. Which, because that was happening a lot with the scenes that just focused on the British characters, I could see that maybe being an
translation
or an asset for the Indian viewing audience rather than us as Westerners.
Yeah, that's what I mean, like translation for them, because those scenes are in English. But they also did it with like, okay, the it's going to be triple the tax, and then you get that scene where that happens, and then like a scene or two later, he's thinking about it, and we get like a little flash to it, and then he explains to someone again that, oh, we're doing the triple the tax, and it's like, I know, buddy, I know this. And it wasn't just the English characters, and then we translate for the natural, you know, Hindi-speaking audience, but there were just some moments where I don't need you to hit this note again. But that's mainly my big complaint. It does draw out the film's runtime, and the last hour or more is the cricket game.
Yeah, I think it was 70 minutes.
Yes, and I know that there's a perfectly good reason to have it like that, and it's the spectacle of it. You're here to see the cricket game. You've spent hours building it up. Now give us the payoff, and it better be more than 15 minutes of payoff. You want a full fucking act of payoff. So I won't wag my finger at that. Just for myself, I don't need it to be as long as it was. There were points where I was just drifting off during it because it isn't as fascinating to me like the rest of the movie was, with the character interplays, the exploration of theme and dynamic. Now, they do go out of their way to break up the cricket game with stuff.
Yeah, because it's set over 3 days, so and you do have some scenes in the village still.
And the construction of the cricket game and the conflicts within it and the betrayals and the desperation were all top-notch. I'm not going to dissuade any of that. Just, I don't need the spectacle of it to be as long as it was, but I'm just raising that as an admission that
I did zone out
a lot more in that portion.
There are a lot of parts in that fight, the cricket game, where time passed through montage because, you know, nothing of note for film dramatic beats is happening here. Let's cut to when something does happen. Like, oh, this guy came out or he got out.
Yes. And again, that's not really a true negative in my eyes, because that's just a case of that's not for me, the inclusion of such a long cricket stuff. But I understand completely why it's there. And for an audience who loves that stuff like your uncle, that's the reward. That's like you, the audience, have earned this and the movie has earned it. Personally, I don't need it, but I think the script and the dialogue just kind of circling back over things they've already done is more of an issue. But those are my main hang-ups with this.
Well, you just said there, the big beats of the cricket game are obviously, you know, what we came for. But when I was reading up about the film afterwards, I think I was looking up something specifically about cricket, and I came across a thread on the Reddit cricket subreddit, like literally r/cricket, of someone talking about this film, and I read through a lot of the posts there, and yeah, people that love cricket really love this film. And like two of the comments that were in that thread or post, whatever you call them on Reddit, pointed out how like every single little thing that you want out of a cricket match happens in this. And they were like talking about all of these, there's like a dozen techniques. It's like all of these techniques happen in this film, and it's like amazing. I love this film. It's like, wow.
And yet it still works for a layman like us.
Yeah.
We don't need the film to bog us down in the jargon and the technicals, because any good sports movie should get you invested in the sport, even if you know nothing about it or you actively don't like it. You know, like I don't give a shit about boxing, but I can enjoy a Rocky movie, or I don't care about bobsledding. But, you know, you get me in a Disney film with John Candy teaching Jamaicans how to bobsled, and I'm all on board. I want to watch that movie.
We've talked about that a lot. Like, we're not big sports fans, but sports films, you know, they have an appeal to them.
Or even if you are familiar with something, like I am with soccer/football, and we watched Bend It Like Beckham, I can appreciate all those little details, but I can also like the fact that the movie is still being cohesive for film goers who don't know those things at all. And that's the beauty of something like Lagan, where they give you 2.5 hours or so of the people we're going to be rooting for in the game rather than the game itself. Let's be real honest here. When they were training for cricket and doing all of the preparation for cricket, I didn't feel like the movie was really invested in the actual semantics of cricket. It was more involved in the interpersonal dynamics of the team rather than like, okay, I don't think I learned how cricket works by watching them learn how it works, because the film was more like looking at who the people were rather than like, here's how a technical thing of cricket is played. I don't know if you felt similar.
Well, a lot of those moments where they were going into the technicals of how cricket were played for laughs, because a big thing for them is when they first see the game, they compare it to a common children's game that all Indians played when they were young. I think it was like Gully Duggy or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And so they jump to conclusions like, oh, this game's exactly the same. And you have the sequence where they're explaining to Elizabeth their understanding. She's like, yeah, you don't have to translate for me. I know exactly how off base they are about this.
But overall, I had a decent time with this. The length of it, although a little long, I didn't find that it dragged. The pace, again, I thought this was a well-structured movie. Some issues. The songs, not a single one I could remember. None of them stood out to me. They were all fine. Like, they all matched one another. They didn't have anything extravagant. I liked... Probably the one I liked the most was it was a nighttime one where they had all the sticks and they were banging them at each other as the music. And I like that one the most.
I think that was the main theme of the movie because throughout the film, you know, the score was like replaying the main part, like the da-da-da, da-da-da-da. It wasn't as strong with me as with Bilu last year, but it did happen again where it was like, this is the film that song I know is from. Mm-hmm. I think that was a big one there. I agree with you. That one was my favorite one as well.
The dancing was perfectly fine in this. The songs were perfectly fine, but I won't be humming or thinking about these ones really as much. I mean, maybe they're similar to Bilu in that way. I haven't thought about a Bilu song since I watched Bilu, but you know what I think about? Doom, 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 machale.
Doom, doom, once again.
I don't like doom too. Like, it's probably my least favorite we've watched, but yeah, boy, do I love the doom song.
The doom machale, every film, specifically all that three one films and, have a version.
And what was that, the basketball one where they're playing sexy basketball and doom too? Was that doom too?
That was doom too. Yeah. I think that was a song that was just scored.
I think they have, him and her have a little
I think a song happens at the end of it.
Yeah, around that sequence. Yeah. And Om Shanti Om, I listened to a bunch of songs from.
Oh, Om Shanti Om's.
I think my favorite from Om Shanti Om is actually the one where they're singing to the villain about what he did.
The last one.
Yeah, that's really one of my favorites.
It's
I
a
love
good
that
sequence,
one.
Yeah.
It's a great sequence. This one musically, nothing will be remembered in my mind.
The first one where the clouds were coming over the village. Like, I find that one really moving because, you know, they were just really optimistic and I really felt the emotions there. And it comes back to what we were saying earlier about it being very diegetic, like making a lot of sense. And the other one to point out is what we literally started this episode on.
Yes.
Where we have some English singing.
That's true. The English singing.
I made a noise.
Bartek did a snort because he's British deep down.
It was like an exhaling snort. I'd never done that before.
Well, one day you'll burp and then you'll know how it's...
I do that like twice a year.
One day you'll hiccup? Which one? What's one of the things you can't do?
I can't, but I can hiccup like a champ, but I can't burp.
There you go. So I was right, burp. Right, yeah. Right. Thank you. You threw me off with your statement. But anything else you want to say or anything else you want to ask of me since we always have like this Q&A it feels of me with Indian movies?
Anything I want to ask of you?
I know. It's tough stuff to think about. It's an epic film in length.
Did you think they were going to win?
Yes. I never doubted. I never doubted for a single second that they were going to win. It would have been hilarious if they lost.
Yeah, and then it's like, oh, fuck. We now have to make triple Lagan.
Our main character was Max from Mad Max, in which his name is lost through the sands of time, but his actions will live on in a way. And you know, did he exist? Who knows?
Mm, yeah, that's how the film ends.
I mean, with the narrator, a little boy who he inspired.
That would have been great. Timu or whatever, Tipo?
Yeah. Wouldn't that be wonderful if your big Indian actor man narrator was revealed to be the feral kid of this movie?
Not that I want to ask of you, but I want to point out that I really like the fortune teller character.
He was great.
He was a lot of fun. He was very hammy.
You say that, but I was expecting him to be more over the line, overwrought, silly character. But he was at times, but he was a lot more, again, this film is a lot more straight-laced than what I've seen previously. Like, if this was, who's the director of Om Shanti Om?
Farah Khan.
If Farah Khan directed this... He would be the principal from Enuna. Oh yeah, he would be spitting everywhere. Mm. If she directed this, the cricket would also be played as a musical sequence where they're kind of like hitting the balls and dancing like numbers. Yeah. But in this, it's like that. They just play it like cricket.
I just really liked when he was fielding and the first few times where the ball was coming in his direction, like, God damn, you're making me run. I also really like the angle of how the first people to join the team were like the weird ones, like him and the guy that could only like scream.
Yeah, that was really wonderful. But that is Ligan. I would recommend this to people. And I am happy that to say that this is one of those where my opinion on the movie has grown through the conversation.
Cool.
Because,
yeah,
you know, walking in, I would still place this kind of in the middle. If I have to give my ranking of the Indian films we've watched, Om Shanti Om's number one.
Yeah, I agree.
Sultan is number two.
Is it Main Huna, Doom 2, this, and Bilu?
I would put this above Bilu now.
Mm. So third?
When I was walking in, I was going to put Bilu above this because I just really like a central character of Bilu. But even then, oh no, Shah Rukh Khan does give a great performance in that, like the crying scene. But I think this film annoyed me less than Bilu.
Fair.
Bilu did annoy me at times. So this is number three, Bilu's number four, Main Huna, and then Dum 2.
Mm-hmm. That's fair.
I think that's my go of it. Do you have of the ones we've watched, do you have an order that you would put them in? I'm putting a gun against your head.
Not really, but Om Shanti Om is my favorite one.
No, give us an order. This is your childhood.
Give
now
you
put them in order.
My order is put down the gun.
Put down the gun.
Put down Lagan.
Put down Lagan. Do you have a favorite Khan?
I mean, I really like Shah Rukh Khan.
We need to get more, not just Irfan Khan, but we also need to get more Salman Khan. I like Salman Khan. He's great. He's my favorite.
No, I want to do the other film of his that I've seen. I can never remember the title, but it's really good. It's a really great set. Production.
So you recommend Lagan?
I do recommend Lagan, yeah. The person that did the score for this film is A.R. Rahman. He's the one that did it for Slumdog Millionaire, where he won two Oscars for that one.
That's impressive. That's cool.
Yeah, he's a big one. He's. I remember when Slumdog Millionaire was coming out, Mum was talking about Rahman. I was like, oh yeah, the Bollywood guy. He's doing this film that's American, and he's nominated for Oscars, and he won both.
That's neat.
Best song and best score.
He deserved them.
I think his speech. I think he was like nervous in his Academy speeches too. So it was like, you know, one of those like really kind of, oh, we like this guy kind of thing.
That's so cool. But it is now my turn to recommend a film for the podcast.
Mm-hmm.
We are up to episode 400, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, I think so. I remember we talked about it last week where it was like your pick was going to be a 400. I think it's the next one.
So it's mine.
Yeah.
Yes. Episode 400 of our podcast is going to be a film that stars Paul Giamatti in it.
Mm-hmm.
I will make sure to let us all not get our hopes high. He is a supporting. He's not a main. He's in the movie
enough.
For small helpings. But
he's not always the main.
He's not always. He's what we call a Polish surprise in this. Now that's a movie where the British were played like cartoons. In comparison.
Earlier on in this episode, you said that
Desert and Wilderness is the film we're referencing, just for those who want to know.
Early in this episode, you said that this film was really steady. Someone,
yes, it was steady.
Someone's calling me.
Someone's literally calling you as we end the podcast.
From Sydney, too. Who comes from New South Wales?
It's a Polish surprise.
Polish surprise. You said that this film was a really steady one, and in the film itself, a lot of the British say, like, oh, steady on. And steady on was one of the other lines from the English dub of In Desert and Wilderness.
Yes. But I am going to pitch our way The Nanny Diaries, starring Scarlett Johansson and Chris Evans. We have joked about The Nanny Diaries on the podcast many times over and said that it will be a big event movie we do because it was one that definitely evaded somehow unappreciated masterpieces coverage.
Okay.
I will double check, but I'm pretty sure we'll get Rachel on for this discussion, my wife.
Mm-hmm.
She's a fan of this movie. I have never seen this movie, but I know of it. It's just one of those where I'm sure if you see a poster of it, you go, oh, I know what this type of movie is. And it's got Paul Giamatti in it, and I'm pretty sure he is like the dad of the kid that the nanny is a nanny for. And I think he's got a mysterious name. Like, I think he's called Mr. X or something. And I'm like, this is great. And he looks like, this is right after Shoot 'Em Up. He did Shoot 'Em Up and then this kid's movie.
Oh, great.
Classic
great.
Paul. Classic fucking Paul Giamatti. To the prime. Prime Marty. That's prime, what we call
prime
him.
Prime Marty.
Oscar nominee. Two-time Oscar nominee, Paul Giamatti in The Nanny Diaries.
Yeah, he didn't win.
No, he didn't win for The Holdovers and he didn't win for Cinderella Man, the two he was nominated for. I'm pretty sure. I don't think he was ever nominated for Sideways. Sideways will be episode 500.
He can, you know, sit down with Lagan and be like, yeah, we both didn't win.
Do you think he's a big cricket fan, Paul Giamatti? Do you think he's constantly being like, throw the ball! No ball! No ball!
Well, I don't know if he is or isn't a big cricket fan, but I would certainly love to hear him give a speech about it.
Thank you. Now, everyone, you can find us on social medias of Facebook and Twitter, Spit and Polish Presents. You can suggest movies to us. If you recommend a movie to us, we add it to our list and we get around to watching it. Bartek said that we have another Bollywood recommendation there. Mm-hmm. Perhaps we'll get around to that. I don't know if that's one available on Netflix. We'll have to double check. But we love getting recommendations from you, and so please give them our way, and we add them and we'll get around to them. We need more recommendations. We're getting on the shorter side, and I am thankful that we've managed for years not to actually run out, because I always wondered, what happens if we don't have a listener pick? Like, if we actually exhaust the list. But this is the first time in Pictures Power where we're actually facing that, where we go, oh, we've only got like, we've still got what in real time is a few months worth, but...
No, well, that's why I'm never worried.
But 90% of them are movies we haven't found because they're foreign films that are difficult to find. So, in a way, we have a list, but it's like maybe half that list we can't watch.
But there's always the secret backup plan of, I'm going to say the quiet part out loud, but I can just ask someone like, hey, do you recommend something? And they can tell me a film and then I'll just put that on the list.
You're poisoning the well. But,
no, but it's listening
you can
people.
Email us over at spitandpolished@gmail.com for recommendations if you don't have social media available in that way that we are on the ones we use. Or if you just want to let us know your thoughts on things we've discussed or ask us questions and so much else. We are on all of those podcasting sites available, aren't we, Bartek? We're on all of them,
mm-hmm.
Even the ones that are dead.
Yeah, we're on zombies.
We're on Google Podcasts and iHeartRadio. RIP to both in the year that we record this. But that's it. That's all we have to say about Lagan. What was the subtitle again? Mexican Story in India. What was it again?
No, that's it. Mexican Story in India. Back in action.
Imagine if the Looney Tunes showed up in this film.
Wait, that was the Doom 2 one, right?
Well, yeah, Doom 2 back in action. And I joked that it was Looney Tunes back in action.
Yeah.
Directed by Joe Dante, who did Gremlins and Small Soldiers.
Hmm.
Small Soldiers? Yes.
Yes.
There's another movie called Toy Soldiers, and I get that confused.
I've never seen that film, but I hear it mentioned, and I always think they're talking about Small Soldiers. Hey, my mum's probably listening to this episode. Hi, Mum.
Hi, Mummy. Hi, Mummy. What's Mum in Polish?
Mama or Mamo?
Mamu.
Mamusha.
Mamusha.
A little like Mummy. Mamusha.